welcome to the Young Turks. I'm Anna Kasparian. Joining me today is Michael Shore. Cenk is out. And to be honest with you, I didn't even know that Cenk was out until like 2 minutes before the show. But I'm excited to host with you, Michael.
All right, good. I'm glad you're excited.
Michael comes
in. You haven't shown it yet, though.
I know. Michael comes in. Fine. Things are chaotic, and I didn't get a chance to like properly greet you. But we're going to have an awesome show. There's lots of updates to the story out in Houston. And we also have a pretty explosive update on what's going on with the Russia investigation. So we'll get to that. And Trump's getting a little bit of criticism from Fox News from Laura Ingraham. So we'll jump into that story as well. So I'm excited about it. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm well. I mean, you know, it's a terrible, terrible story we're having to cover. I hate covering this disaster stuff. I hate seeing people. I hate the conversations that come out of it, that it goes to partisanship now, that it's, oh, it's a red state, and the people in blue state say, well, they didn't want the funding. These people are desperate, and there's plenty of time to deal with it.
Exactly. It doesn't matter what someone's political ideology is or what a state's political leanings are. We're Americans. We help each other out. And unfortunately, things immediately lead to people going to their corners and yelling at each other.
Right. And that's what happens. And there is going to be time to talk about the hypocrisy. There's going to be time to talk about if this is the right moment in our history for tax cuts. There's going to be a huge conversation about the EPA, about FEMA, about filling jobs, about the positions of Republicans and in the Northeast who are still pissed about Sandy, who say all of that. But also, these are just people, you know.
Exactly. I came across, I'm not familiar with the guy. He's some retired radio host, I guess conservative radio. And he just tweeted this really disgusting thing about a black mother who was on CNN. You know, and she's desperate. She's dealing with a tragic situation with the storm. She evacuated her home. And his response was, oh, black woman drops the F-bomb during CNN interview, real classy, where's her husband? Oh, right, he doesn't exist. Like, who says things like that? Why do these people exist? What's wrong with you?
Who was this person?
I wasn't familiar with him, but he had a pretty significant following, so he must be someone. And
significant following of insignificant people.
Exactly, yeah. All right, let's move on to some updates on the situation in Texas. Donald Trump did visit Texas today as an effort to show his support for the good people of Texas following the storm, Hurricane Harvey. Now, he did not go to Houston. He decided to go to Corpus Christi. According to the New York Times, he settled on Corpus Christi because it was 30 miles away from the most severely impacted parts of the golf course and suffered relatively light damage from the initial impact of the storm. Now, his camp is alleging that the reason why he made that decision was because he didn't want to disturb the recovery effort and the relief efforts in Houston. And, you know, there's really no way of confirming whether or not that's the real reason why he didn't go to went to Corpus Christi and not to Houston. I do know that anytime the president travels somewhere, there's a huge security detail that comes along with it. And so it is what it is.
Also, the president's not going to go into the middle of, you cannot get everybody that needs to go into the middle of Houston now because it's flooded, and you don't want to sort of drain is the worst word I could use right now, but you don't want to sap their resources in Houston right now to protect the president, whoever that president is, at any time. So it makes sense that he went to Corpus Christi. The storm has passed there. There were people there. It's where it made landfall. It's where a lot of the, you know, affected businesses are too.
Exactly. So he's about 4 hours away from Houston, the nation's fourth most populous city. And so there have been videos circulating on, you know, social media as well as the mainstream media in regard to his visit. And he did get a little bit of criticism for some of the statements he made to the residents of Corpus Christi. I don't want to give too much away. Let's go ahead and toss the video.
Thank you, everybody. What a crowd, what a turnout. I want to thank our governor. Your governor has done a fantastic job. Governor Abbott, thank you very much. I will tell you, this is historic. It's epic what happened. But you know what? It happened in Texas, and Texas can handle anything. Thank you all, folks. Thank you.
So Christina Wilkie, who's an investigative reporter, had tweeted about how he seemed amazed at the crowd size, which is a strange thing to talk about, given the fact that so many people are dealing with such a tragic situation. And he's obsessed with crowd sizes. We all know that.
Right.
He mentions crowd sizes all the time. And then historic and epic makes it sound like something great happened, when in reality something tragic happened. Look, he's not a cunning linguist. Like, he's not known for saying the right things at the right time. So I'm not giving him a pass, but I just don't have high expectations for what
he's but just the way he talked about the turnout. I mean, the president is at a disaster scene. You sort of expected him to come in and say, by the way, did I also tell you by how many electoral votes we won? We had surprises in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. I mean, that's what it felt like. It felt like it became about that, about the crowd size. It always goes to that. And I'm not saying he was insensitive. I can't imagine anybody going there and being insensitive.
He's incredibly insecure about the fact that he won the election.
Yeah.
Isn't that strange? I mean, you won, dude. We get it. You won. Let's just move on. Okay.
Yeah.
So his White House social media director also posted a video of the crowd on social media, which made some people roll their eyes. Take a look at that. All right, so there you go.
I mean, it just seems it's juxtaposed to what's going on in Houston. You know, hours away, these people are literally dying and out of their homes. And you see the people in Corpus Christi, USA, going crazy for the president. I don't know, it just, I find it bizarre. There's a time, you know, there's a sort of somber thankfulness that you show a president that they did to Bush, that they did to Obama when he was there. I remember Bill Clinton went to Oklahoma City after the Murrah building was bombed, and he walked into Oklahoma City. There was, I think it's where his presidency took a pivot, but he was treated by this most Republican state in the country at that time, by that crowd, and it, you know, it was just, hey, thanks for being here. I know everything seems like a rally with Donald Trump. Maybe I'm too picky about that now. Maybe I'm too used to it, but everything seems like a rally.
The nature of that video was that's the social media director for the White House,
right?
So it wasn't an accident. He wasn't on his random page and going, hey, you know, this is kind of amazing. This
many
people showed up.
Yeah,
this was there was a message behind this. Hey, check this out. I'm gonna spam the entire crowd and then back again. Make sure you guys know this, the entire crowd and then back again. The point is to show how many people are there. That is the point. That is the planned effort.
They love turnout.
By this.
They just
turnout. Despite what happened, look how many people still love our president. Not despite what happened, look how the president's out here to support Americans.
Right.
It's the other way around. Look how many people support me.
That's the best way of putting it and kind of putting things in perspective. This is a moment where we should show empathy and concern for the victims of this storm. And this did turn into what appeared to be like a celebratory thing.
Right.
Celebratory event. Optics matter. And so when you think about optics, it just doesn't look good. But those are apparently, you know, Trump supporters. They were excited that he was there. I do commend him for going to Texas, you know, to be fair. And also, look,
I mean, he was going to go, and he also made a good move to go to Corpus Christi. Initially, he was going to go to San Antonio, which is nowhere near where this happened, just to be in Texas. And they thought better of that idea, you know, that they should go to a place that was affected by it.
Exactly. And as long as they're allocating the appropriate resources to make sure that they help the victims of this storm, that's really all that matters. So again, based on what I've seen, based on the research I've done, it appears that they're taking it seriously. They are allocating the resources. And, you know, fair is fair. That's the most important thing. So that's
fair is fair. But again, and I'm not just saying that you're not right about that. Mm-hmm. The work begins when the storm ends, though. And that's where the resources are going to be really, really need to be scrutinized, because rebuilding, getting people back into homes, people that don't have flood insurance, people who didn't buy flood insurance because they didn't think that they would need it where they were living. make sure that they're not screwed out of getting some kind of support to get back into a home or to get their mold remediated and all of the things that need to happen down in rebuilding all those jobs in the near where the president was. All that stuff has to happen after the storm's gone. I mean, what they're doing now, remarkable, amazing people thinking on their feet and families and helping other families and neighbors and all the things you like to hear. But where he's going to be judged and this administration is going to be judged after the storm.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So petty thought on that last point. He's a part of the government, this huge government that we want to limit and reduce and stop from helping people. You're supposed to be there to help people. You're bragging about how awesome and epic and unprecedented this storm was. But that you're going to come and take care of it. Take care of it with what?
Right.
Government funds that American citizens pay taxes for?
Right.
So that if you do that, and ironically, I saw this on Twitter, so I won't take credit. There's a Don't Tread on Me flag in that crowd of raving fans. What is that? What's the whole point of people that carry that flag?
No,
limited government. Stop stepping on my rights. Stop coming in and getting it with your government funding and your bureaucracy and red tape. Hey, you need a little bit of bureaucracy, you need a little red tape, you need some funds to help your
and
your
you need to
recover.
Eat some humble pie too, because these are the people that criticize government, want to make government smaller, shrink it to the size of a whatever it is in Grover Norquist's bathtub. But that's exactly right, and I think too that when you see what these people are saying about, and I know we got to move on, but this is really important. That I saw a libertarian yesterday, an avowed libertarian on Twitter saying, complaining that they didn't evacuate the government, the mayor didn't tell us to evacuate quickly enough. These are people who hate government complaining about government. You need government. It's like a malpractice attorney. Until you are a victim of malpractice, you don't care about malpractice attorneys.
You're exactly right. Yeah. And so we will see how it plays out in the future regarding allocating the resources to help people who have lost their property, who have lost loved ones as a result of the storm. But it reminds me, it's a little different, obviously, but it does remind me of car insurance, right? Which we have to mandatorily purchase. And it sucks. Every month you pay that car insurance, you're like, I hate car insurance. And then once you get into an accident, you're like, oh, thank God I have car
insurance.
This is cool.
They just put me in a car and they fixed mine.
Right, exactly. Wow. So look, I think more importantly, it's critical for us to have empathy. So on any given day, you will hear members of the right, you will hear libertarians arguing against government programs that help the poor. Oh, they're moochers. Why should my money go toward them? There's no empathy toward them. But the reality is, you never know when you're going to fall on hard times. And it is my belief that the role of the government is to protect us, to take care of us in times of need. It's not supposed to be there to regulate who we marry, how we have sex, where we have sex, unless it's public spaces. You probably shouldn't have sex in public spaces. But it's the role of the government to make sure we're safe and to make sure that we're taken care of. And in this case, it appears the government stepping up to the plate. It appears that those on the right are applauding that. Just make sure you applaud that when those in need need it in the future. Let's move on to another angle to this story. Hurricane Harvey has severely flooded Houston, Texas. In fact, there has been more than 20 inches of rain reported. 300,000 people were left without power at various times, and more than 7,000 people were evacuated and forced to stay at various shelters, including the Brown Convention Center on Monday night. Now, I'm sorry, the George R. Brown Convention Center. Now, the capacity of that convention center is about 5,000. However, there are varying reports indicating that there were between 7,000 to 11,000 people attempting to find shelter there. So the situation is dire. Let's go to graphic 27. One individual says that it's, quote, hell. He also says, all my stuff damaged. I have no clothes, no shoes, no clothing. So people are desperate to find shelter, and unfortunately, there is very little room to house these individuals and keep them safe. So as a result, there have been some public figures who have faced criticism for what appeared to be them closing the doors on the residents of Houston. Joel Osteen, who is a very well-known prosperity gospel preacher, originally shut his doors to residents of Houston. He lives in the area as well. However, after criticism, it appears that he opened the doors to his gigantic church, which can house 16,800 people and is now taking care of them. Now on Sunday, Lakewood Church posted on Facebook that it was, quote, inaccessible due to severe flooding and directed displaced residents to shelters in the city. The church can hold more than 16,800 people. The Facebook post did court criticism on social media, where photos appear to suggest that the massive building had not been damaged by the rains. All right, so I'm gonna be as clear as I can on this story. There is not a lot of clarity on what's really going on, right? So Joel Osteen is claiming that it was in an area that had a flood warning. He claimed that, you know, the church was not flooded itself, but the parking garage was flooded. People who lived in the area said that's not true. They shared pictures on social media and said there are cars driving in this area. There's no flooding. The church is completely fine. Even Snopes looked into it and said that the results of this story are mixed. So it's really hard to assess the situation. But what I will say is, if I put myself in his shoes, and I have very little love for him, if I put myself in his shoes and I had a mega church that used to be a stadium, and there was any potential of flooding or harm, I probably wouldn't take that risk because I don't want to risk anyone's life. That's just where I'm at.
Well, but here's the thing. The entire city, virtually the entire city of Houston, is flooded.
Yeah.
The people that are seeking refuge are seeking refuge from terrible flooding. And if they go to some flooding or perhaps a place where there are services, that's an improvement over where they're leaving.
Yeah.
And so I think the fact that he didn't open it up as a shelter to some of these people, I mean, shelter is a funny word too, because that church is a 16,000 capacity tax shelter, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they are subsidized.
They are.
You know, and he who gets shelter from our government didn't give shelter at a time where the risk, I understand it. I understand why you as Joel Osteen would be, you know,
hesitant, right?
Hesitant's a better word. But still, this is a disaster. Like and he is a minister.
And he's an incredibly wealthy minister. He lives in a $10 million
mansion. Have them over there. What I'm saying is, if he was the poorest minister in the world, but he had a 16,000 seat sanctuary, literally, to have people that can come in there, and there was a risk of flooding, there's flooding everywhere. It just doesn't ring true to me. And I'm not saying, you know, I don't know enough about Joel Osteen. It looks terrible to me.
It does look terrible. To be fair, in 2005, he did open his church to victims of Hurricane Katrina. So, you know, in the past, he has helped people and in a big way. So I feel like with this story, it's kind of hard to tell what's really going on. And I feel bad criticizing him because, again, anytime we do a story, I want to put myself in the shoes of the person that I'm about to criticize and think about what I would do. I don't have hard evidence indicating that, you know, it was either completely flooded, a little flooded, no threat of flooding whatsoever. And so I hate the story because I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. And Snopes doesn't know. There's no article that's even clear on it. And so you have to make a decision. Right. Do you risk people's lives, potentially risk people's lives, or do you, you know, open your doors and shelter them anyway?
You open your doors and you shelter them.
Yeah, well, he's doing that now.
He's doing that now. And most ministers and pastors and men and women of the cloth there are doing it. And, you know, he may have done it in Katrina. He may have done many, many things that make him a worthwhile citizen. He made a bad call here.
So despite when it happened, because there was water, then there wasn't water, then there wasn't, then there was again. The thought that I had when I saw this was, there is, again, it goes back to the policies and also support from your government that you fund. Mm-hmm. Many people, mostly conservatives, will say, hey, you know, we got to stop handing out all this money to these gimme people and let the churches and charities help.
Yeah.
Churches and charities don't always help. Sometimes they do, a lot of times they do, sometimes they don't. In this case, when they don't, for whatever reason, out of being cautious or just not feeling like it because he doesn't want all these people in his church, whatever reason it may be, he wasn't able to help or wasn't willing to help. That's why you always have your government that you actually pay for do this.
Right.
So just, it's not always the churches that are going to take care of it.
You shouldn't rely upon that. But generally speaking, they that's part of their shtick, although they probably wouldn't say shtick.
I mean, it goes along with the theme that we see over and over again in the news, people who take advantage of opportunities that lead to their success
right.
and then sometimes, a lot of times, they'll shut the door behind them and not provide the same opportunities to those in need. And so, again, look, if there is any indication that that church was not under any threat and he shut his doors, then he deserves any and all criticism.
Right.
But I'm glad that he opened the doors and he's sheltering these individuals now, especially considering how large that space is.
Right, and considering again how much we shelter him with our tax dollars.
Right. So. Well, that's something that I want to change. That's something that shouldn't even exist.
It's ridiculous, but that's why I find it so ironic that he wouldn't provide shelter when we provide him shelter every day from the tax structure of America.
Exactly. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we will jump right into the story of Fox News criticizing Donald Trump. Stick around. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to TYT. Anna and Michael with you. Some TYT lives for you. Savannah, I hear you out. I saw your tweet. She says, important to know there were 21 mosques open while Olsteen's church was closed. So we did our best to look into that and verify it during the break. It appears that some of the mosques were open. However, no one has verified that 21 mosques were open. But if there were mosques open in the area and Olsteen decided to shut his doors, obviously that's a problem. So thank you for that information. We'll continue looking into it. Once we get verification, we'll update you. Also, Chris Hook says, yes, great point by J.R. Jackson. I'm not sure which point, because you made a lot of good ones.
It doesn't really matter. It was all of them.
All of them. Daniel Pareja says, people are people. If they're in trouble, help them out. Doesn't matter if they're in New York or Texas, help them out. Could not agree more. All right, I want to say thank you to our members. You guys help make the show happen, and we like to do some extra content for you guys, members-only exclusive content. Today, there will be a members-only post-game show featuring myself and Brett, and it'll be fun, so you should watch it.
And thank you to my mom for apparently tweeting as someone to tell me that I missed a button on my shirt.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, it's not really my mom, but it's the only person who would tell me that. So,
that's hilarious. Also, there will be a TYT Old School episode this week featuring Jake Uger, Mark Thompson, and Steve-O live tomorrow night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Pacific. That is also members-only content, so make sure you check it out if you are a member. If you're not, you can join by going to tytnetwork.com/join. All right, let's get to some Trump criticism. Not by us, by Fox News. Amazing. All right. Fox News recently had a segment in which some of its hosts and contributors criticized the fact that Donald Trump has yet to fill important positions in federal agencies that provide help, disaster relief, for instance, to our fine Americans, our fine citizens. And it was a surprising segment, to say the least, because it featured Laura Ingraham, who's been a pretty big Trump supporter. Let's take a look.
Where's the staff? Where's Homeland Security? Where are the nominations? Why are they being held up? And why are so many positions don't have nominees for them yet?
Yeah, well, we only have had a FEMA director since June. Now, truth be told, the Trump administration didn't nominate Brock until April. So that wasn't a bad turnaround, but I think we can all look at these horrific pictures, and we can conclude that a federal government does need staff. We see it acutely in need of staff in a situation like this. This isn't the only crisis we're facing. This is massive, humanitarian. We're also facing a huge crisis with North Korea. We're facing a crisis of confidence across the country, where people wonder, even with President Trump in, he said he was going to drain the swamp, can we have a government that works for the people and not just have a people enslaved to the government? This is a question that has to be posed to the administration. I know they have a lot on their hands, but we have to have people in place. If there's a plan to not staff and cause the ultimate shrinkage of government, let's hear about that as well.
About make government bigger, make government bigger, make government bigger on Fox News.
Just I know, they're so pro-government. Usually, you know, you'll tune in and they're like, oh, government's so important, we need bigger government.
Right, well, in Houston, they finally found a swamp to drain, so it's perfect. Now they're totally set up for what they wanted all along.
Oh, and the White House is full of swamp monsters. Let's keep it real, right? Donald Trump did the exact opposite of everything he said he was gonna do. You have, you know, Rex Tillerson, you have Steve Mnuchin. Those are the same types of people that he was railing against during his campaign. Now they exist within the federal government, and I can't say they're thriving in the federal government, because any of them can be fired at any moment. But, you know, in regard to what's happening in Texas, yeah, see that type of empathy you're feeling right now, Laura Ingraham? That's the type of empathy that you should have for all Americans, not just Texans, right? Here on this set, everyone here has empathy for people who are suffering in Texas right now, regardless of their political ideology, regardless of their backgrounds. And that's not the kind of empathy that I've seen from you when it comes to impoverished Americans, Americans who have dealt with institutionalized racism and unequal opportunities. It's just, it's incredible how they're unable to see outside of their own bubbles. They only want to take care of their own, but they don't care about others who are in need, right? Government's important when it comes to situations like this. It's important when it comes to protecting national security. It's also important when it comes to protecting Americans in general, regardless of the situation that they're facing. Yeah. And again, no empathy for them from them when it comes to those issues.
And wait till the EPA, they start looking at the EPA and what Scott Pruitt and the government has done there and the administration has done there to really gut the EPA. And the EPA is who these people are going to be relying upon to rebuild, to clean up the mess, to clean up the disaster down there. Those positions aren't filled. And the Republicans never think about the EPA. They want to get rid of the EPA, if
anything.
That's right. And so it's, listen, it's one of the three things I think that Rick Perry wanted to gut, or two or six. but it's unbelievable, because when you hear this happen, you can't help but think, you know, how foolish these people look, how foolish Ted Cruz looks. We'll get to that later. Voting on, you know, saying that Sandy was full of, the Sandy bill was full of pork. We need federal aid for Texas. It's much different than when Sandy was happening. These are people who are hypocrites. When they need it, they want it. And you could see the three hosts. I mean, I hate when Steve Ducey's on vacation, but the three hosts there just kind of nodding their heads to what Laura Ingraham's saying. Anna looked at me and said, I don't even know what that means, you know, and I don't know what she meant.
Right. She says, we need a government that works, but not a government that we're enslaved to.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing. That's not her exact quote, but that's what she implied.
Yeah, I don't know what she meant either.
I don't know what that is. But we all know that Fox News is a news outlet that Donald Trump loves to watch. So he actually responded to that segment, of course, in the form of a tweet, and said, we're not looking to fill all those positions, don't need many of them, reduce size of government. And he included Laura Ingraham in that tweet. Okay. Here's the reality. He's incompetent, and there's a ton of roles, not just among the agencies that Laura Ingraham mentioned, but the State Department. You know, the State Department still has a number of nominations that still need to be mentioned by Donald Trump, mm-hmm. suggested by Donald Trump, nominated by Donald Trump, and he hasn't nominated them yet. And he doesn't really seem interested. It's not about, you know, reducing the size of the government. It requires work. It requires critical thinking. It requires caring and knowing about these issues. And that's not something that he has any interest in.
No. I mean, a surge in Afghanistan, we don't have an ambassador there.
Right.
I mean, little things like that are not little. And disaster, we don't have people in place. Brock Long seems like he's doing a very good job, and that he's learned from the mistakes of FEMA in the past at other natural disasters to a degree, because the next person will learn from him. But it just proves that you need people in place that are qualified and ready for this job.
And I also want to be clear that it goes further than nominations. A lot of things need to be done, including changing Donald Trump's mindset when it comes to certain executive orders that Barack Obama signed. So in 2015, Barack Obama signed an incredibly important executive order indicating that any infrastructure development, any development for buildings, would be required to meet certain flood-proof requirements, okay, to take into account the rising water levels, sea levels, the extreme weather conditions that were currently dealing with. And so after the whole hate rally occurred in Charlottesville, Virginia, you can recall that Trump gave that pretty crazy and explosive press conference that was meant to specifically talk about infrastructure. And in that speech, he talked about undoing that executive order that was signed by Obama. Now, earlier we were talking about, hey, it seems like the federal government is handling the situation in Houston pretty well so far, but there's a lot of work that's gonna have to be done later. But there's a lot of work that should have been done prior to this, right? We need to take action to mitigate the extreme weather conditions that we're dealing with right now. And the fact that he just undid that executive order is ridiculous. There was no critical thinking involved. He just wants to undo anything that Obama did. Doesn't matter if there was a lot of logic behind what Obama did. He just hates Obama. And so for political brownie points, it's brownie points, right?
Yeah.
He'll go ahead and undo something that made a lot of sense.
And walk away from the Paris climate
agreement. Yeah. All right. One final component to the storm that I wanted to cover before we move on to other things. Fox News recently had a segment featuring Jesse Waters, and he was talking about something that was going viral online. So I'm not going to give it a lot away. Let's just go ahead and toss the video, and then I'll fill you in on the details.
I've seen some amazing things out there just looking at television over the weekend. Alligators on people's back doorsteps. I saw a shark on a highway swimming
like
in the
Sharknado.
Water. Like Sharknado. I saw a hawk sitting in someone's taxi cab. Greg and I were saying, you know, the president was using the term biblical. Mm-hmm. Well, there's some really weird biblical things that are going on down there in Houston.
So he was talking about a photo of a photoshopped shark swimming in a flooded freeway. Okay. Funny enough, is this the shark? Is it Sharknado? funny enough, it was the same shark that was used in Photoshop after Hurricane Katrina. And of course, it was debunked. Everyone knew that this particular story had already been debunked. Right. And Jesse Waters reported it because, hey, biblical things are happening. Biblical things are happening. They won't believe climate change, right?
They don't.
They think climate change is a hoax, even though there's scientific evidence indicating that it's happening and it's man-made. But there's a shark swimming, allegedly a shark swimming in the highway.
A hawk in a cab, and you're, and then it's the Bible. That was one of my favorite passages in the Bible, the hawk in the cab passage.
Because a lot of the headlines on this were, dummy Jesse Waters bought that gimmick, right? And I remember you hate April Fool's Day of all holidays.
Right.
Because if we do the show on the day, you're like, I can't read any news because 50% of it is BS, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've never been one to be like, you went for the hoax. You didn't see the hoax? Whatever, man, I didn't see it. I don't care. I don't read everything you read, right? So I was willing to give him a pass on that. Then he decided to go with biblical proportions, which now means the shark swimming in the water. Like you said, the hawk in the cab, I read about it, you heathen. I read about it back when I was in church. And and then the alligators in the water. Dude, you're down in the south by the Gulf Coast. It's like saying, man, we're in Louisiana. I heard there was gators out here.
Right.
Come on, of course there are. So anyway.
That alligator was there before the flood.
Yeah, the biblical proportions, when it has to be, look how God has come in and told the hawk to get the hell out of the hurricane by diving into a cab. That's a smart hawk. He's getting the hell out of the weather. So they want it to be bigger and more, I guess, prophetic than what it could be. For what purpose? I don't know, to continue to tell their viewers, hey, God is coming and he's looking into Houston right now.
Well, it's confirmation bias, right? So if you're the type of person who tends to believe something crazy, then you'll see something, even if it's a hoax, and if it meets your bias, then you're more likely to believe it. At least that's what I think. But anyway, he realized that he had made a mistake. He had fallen for the hoax, and so he did apologize profusely. It's just interesting because all the news outlets that get criticized for being fake news are the ones that tend to criticize Trump, you know, in a justified fashion.
Yeah.
But Fox News never gets called fake news by Donald Trump, right? Their credibility is never called into question. And this story, you know, really makes me realize that.
Yeah, I mean, Christopher Ruddy was on CNN last night, the guy who publishes Newsmax, and he was talking to Don Lemon, and they were having sort of a somewhat highbrow conversation about what fake news is. And Don Lemon did a great job, and I don't always defend Don Lemon's work, but he did a great job kind of defending the selective, the selective criticism that you were just talking about by the president of CNN versus Fox News.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, there is an unbelievable bias that they have, but they will wipe it clean when it comes to the people that like him.
Exactly. I just want to note for the record, we're moving on, but I want to note for the record that you have Sour Patch Kids on the desk.
You know,
like a true adult.
Do we want to get to the bottom of this story here? I mean, where did I get them?
Fake news.
Right, fake news over there. He's got a bag of them.
I know.
Next
can you please show the audience the bag? By the way, this is not
there's
Sour
no bag.
Patch.
This is a hoax.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? You don't have it? It goes with your T-shirt.
I mean, that is a gigantic. Where'd you get that? Costco, for sure. Anyway, all right. Let's move on.
Do you
to
want one?
Russia. No. I'm good. I had a handful earlier.
She was just pointing it out because I haven't offered.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I will update you on Russia and what Republicans are doing to stop Mueller's investigation. Come right back. Welcome back to TYT. Anna and Michael with you. Also on the set is J.R. Jackson, who just read us allegedly a Bible verse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was tweeted at me, but you know, we'll look it up specifically. Although I memorized every other verse in the Bible from my church going days. 2 Timothy, you want me to read it?
Sure.
For the time will come when the people will not put up the sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. Now, if that's invalid and someone made it up, I don't know, we'll see. But
yep, confirmation bias.
2 Timothy does not get a lot of run as a book of the Bible.
Chapter 4, verse 3.
But I'm just 2 Timothy. Were you familiar with 2 Timothy?
No.
Okay, neither was
I. I went to church every Sunday from like 3 to 19.
And he never came up, did he?
He never came up, no.
1 Timothy, though.
1 Timothy, huge. Yeah. Couldn't get enough of 1 Timothy.
Okay, here are some TYT lives for you. Zeiss Cube says. I'm not, by the way, an Ice Cube song came up today on the radio that I had heard forever, and it was awesome. Like, it got me all amped up. Anyway, who cares?
Me too.
He says. I'm not going to lie, that documentary on Sharknados was terrifying. I didn't see it. Did you guys see it?
I've seen Sharknado. I've seen the real Sharknado, like the movie.
Yeah, that's what he's talking about. I think.
The documentary on Sharknados. Yeah, it was ridiculous but hysterical.
Travis Moore says, "Unfortunately, I have no confidence in Trump nominating anyone with experience to these unfilled positions." I agree with you. You know, everyone that he's surrounded himself with is questionable to say the least. So it's not like I think he's going to make good nominations. I just think him not nominating anyone just shows how incompetent he is and how little he really cares. All right, let's move on to.
Now we have guests in the studio. We should just say that there are guests in the studio visiting from Wolfpack,
we
which
do.
Is always great. We're not
going to
say their names because they're missing work for this, so we don't want to say who they are. But it's great when we get support and visitors, and they're on their way to Japan, so they're really missing work. But
oh wow,
anyway, it's great to have.
Great
you guys
to have
here.
You guys.
Brian, I shouldn't even say Brian. I said his name, and I shouldn't have said it. Okay, go ahead.
All right, let's go to Russia. The steady drip of information that's now being publicized as part of the Russia investigation apparently has some Republican members of Congress concerned. So as a result, they would like to do away with some of the resources that are being allocated toward that investigation. Case in point, Representative Ron DeSantis, who is pushing for an amendment to curtail Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian collusion. Now, DeSantis has put forward a provision that would halt funding for Mueller's probe 6 months after the amendment's passage. So it would limit the amount of time that the investigation could take place. It also would prohibit Mueller from investigating matters that occurred before June of 2015 when Trump launched his presidential campaign. Now, that's a little problematic because one of the concerns is that Trump may have worked on some sort of financial deal with Russian officials, and obviously that would have an impact. That would matter. There would be a huge issue there, right? Conflict of interest with his businesses. Who knows what could turn up? But they want to, again, limit the scope of this investigation. And the fact that they're trying to protect Trump is a little concerning. DeSantis said that the order appointing Mueller as special counsel, quote, didn't identify a crime to be investigated and practically invites a fishing expedition. He says that Congress should use its spending power to clarify the scope and limit the duration of this investigation.
And these are things that I'm sure DeSantis could not stop saying when Kenneth Starr was investigating Bill Clinton in Whitewater. I mean, these are quotes from Ron DeSantis, then not even a congressman, saying these exact same. This is ridiculous. This is the most two-sided political speaking out of both sides of your mouth thing ever.
It's incredible that you would identify yourself as someone who wants to essentially halt an investigation into a foreign country meddling in our election. I mean, really, you want to put your name on that? That's just disgusting. The move comes just a day after Representative Adam Schiff from California, head Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, told USA Today that the committee should have, quote, two or three times its current resources for the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. The provision is not guaranteed, by the way, at least DeSantis's. The provision is not guaranteed a vote on the House floor. The House Rules Committee has wide leeway to discard amendments it considers out of order.
Yeah, this is hopefully will be sort of a symbolic amendment that he's putting forward, because that's what happens in Congress. Lots of them do. They don't make it out of the Rules Committee. DeSantis has also in this said that there's not even a crime. So how could we have a special counsel? Well, he's a special counsel. He's not a special prosecutor.
That's
and there
right.
is a difference there. And so I think when you listen to the way that these things are worded generally, you have to look a little deeper. DeSantis is someone with he wrote a book called Dreams of Our Founding Fathers, which was not a parody, but getting by in Obama, in the era of Obama, which was basically because he wrote the book Dreams of My Father. So it's this political nitpicking that's gone on with DeSantis for a long time.
So this is a symbolic effort, likely a symbolic effort. Like usually when lawmakers go through with these symbolic efforts, it's because they're pandering to their base or it'll make them look good in some
right.
way. How does it make someone look good when they're trying to essentially halt an investigation?
Right. And Paul Ryan, the speaker, says this, you know, the last time he talked about Robert Mueller in this investigation, he said he's a good man and he should stay in there and have our support. So
right.
he's not gonna have the support of the speaker, but this, you know, Anna, this could, if it sneaks out of the Rules Committee somehow and it gets to the floor of Congress, it's the kind of thing that could get real support from Republicans who want this thing to end. But there are Republicans who don't like the president too, who want to see this continue.
Right. Look, if I were a Republican, I would try to be a leader and realize that someone like Donald Trump, I know right. it's hilarious right. because we don't see a lot of leadership in Congress right now. But if I were a lawmaker, I would stand up and say, hey, I don't care what the president identifies as. I don't care if he is a staunch conservative Republican. He does not speak for me. He is dangerous and damaging to the country, right? But you don't see that kind of leadership. I mean, you do among some Republican senators, namely the senators who spoke up against Trump during this whole healthcare debate. John McCain has spoken out against him on various occasions. But overall, you see, you know, the polarization playing out. We support our own no matter what, even if they had unlawful dealings with potentially unlawful dealings with foreign officials. So you might be wondering, why is this such a big deal? I mean, has anything of substance turned up from this Russia investigation? Well, yes, it has. And so I want to get to that. Apparently, the investigation has found an email exchange between Michael Cohen, who's Trump's longtime business advisor, and one of Putin's lieutenants. His name is Dmitry Peskov. And he asked for assistance reviving a Trump deal in Russia. This was a Trump tower to be built in Russia. So let me give you the details on that. Michael Cohen had written to Peskov, over the past few months, I have been working with a company based in Russia regarding the development of a Trump Tower Moscow project in Moscow City. Without getting into lengthy specifics, the communication between our two sides has stalled. He says, as this project is too important, I am hereby requesting your assistance. I respectfully request someone, preferably you, contact me so that I might discuss the specifics as well as arranging meetings with the appropriate individuals. I thank you in advance for your assistance and look forward to hearing from you soon. So obviously that email raised some concerns, and the investigation has led to officials now talking to Cohen and trying to get some clarity on what was going on there. And Cohen told congressional investigators in a statement Monday that he did not recall receiving a response from Peskov or having further contact with Russian government officials about the project. The email addressed to Peskov appeared to have been sent to a general Kremlin press account. Cohen also told congressional investigators that the deal was envisioned as a licensing project in which Trump would have been paid for the use of his name by a Moscow-based developer called IC Expert Investment Co. So there's a lot more to this, including the involvement of Felix Sater, who is a Russian broker involved in this deal, and some of the promises that he made in these exchanges. We'll get to that in a second. But what's your assessment of this, Michael?
Well, the assessment is this is a real story, and this is what you get from real reporting. And listen, we're never going to know. You started by talking about, has anything come from the investigation? Do we know anything from Mueller? No, we weren't supposed to know. And a good investigation means you're not going to know for quite a while. Mueller wants it to be as leak-proof as he can ask for, and he seems to be getting a good deal of adherence to that admonition to not have leaks. But when we hear stories like this, which is coming from reporting outside of the scope of this investigation, this is just more stuff for Mueller to chew on. Mm-hmm. This isn't something coming from Mueller, and that should be made clear. This is real. This is Donald Trump working as a candidate, having favoritism from Russia, looking for deals that would make him be actually at a conflict of interest in, as both a candidate and a president and a nominee. So I think this is a serious, serious story. I don't think any of them have not been serious that we've heard from the Washington Post and a lot from the New York Times. I think they're all serious and they all matter, and that's why there's a special counsel working on it.
I think, yeah, there's a special counsel working on it, and you have Republican lawmakers trying to drain the resources from this investigation so it doesn't continue. So let's talk a little bit about what Trump claims he knows and doesn't know. Now, Cohen said that he discussed the deal three times with Trump and that Trump signed a letter of intent with the company on October 28th, 2015. He said that Trump company began to solicit designs from architects and discuss financing. Now, in terms of the email that Cohen had sent to Peskov, Trump allegedly didn't know anything about it. He was completely unaware. If you choose to believe him, that's on you. That's what he alleges. But there was something really interesting regarding a broker in this deal by the name of Felix Sater. He's a Russian-American businessman who actually lived in Trump Tower. Let's go to graphic 13. Over email, Sater bragged to Cohen that he could get Putin to assist with the project and that it would help Trump's presidential campaign, according to correspondence submitted to congressional investigators. So here's his exact message. He said, "Our boy can become president of the USA and we can engineer it. It will get all of Putin's team, I will get all of Putin's team to buy in on this. I will manage this process." Now, the deal never went through. They say that the project never went through, everything stalled. But these exchanges are important.
This single email is more damning than any other email than anyone has ever read about, from Hillary Clinton, from the DNC, from the RNC. This is serious meat to something that is not supposed to happen in American politics, which is meddling from a foreign country in our election process. And that's what this was inviting. That's what this was suggesting was going on. Whether or not the deal happened, of course, the Trump people are going to say, "Oh, the deal never happened. The deal never happened. That means nothing. You know, this is all hearsay." And the fact that the deal didn't happen, we know Donald Trump has failed deals. We know that he has deals that don't happen. He's a businessman. He's been a failed and a successful businessman at different times. But what happened in these emails, you know, when you smell a rat, right? This is smelling a rat. And this is why there's an investigation going on, both in Congress and with a special counsel. And this is perfect for that.
So just one final point about Sater, just so you know all the characters that kind of play into this whole story. Sater has a criminal record. He served time in jail in the 1990s after a bar fight and also pleaded guilty in 1998 to his role in mafia-linked stock fraud. Federal officials have said he then cooperated on various national security and criminal investigations. So you kind of get a sense of who this guy is. I think it's relevant. But one thing that I am concerned about is what just happened with Donald Trump giving a pardon to Sheriff Joe Arpaio, former sheriff of Maricopa County, Arizona. He was found in contempt of court, criminal contempt of court. A federal judge found him guilty and he was pardoned. And so some are now speculating that Donald Trump could potentially pardon people like Paul Manafort if they're found in contempt of court for refusing to cooperate with this investigation.
Yeah, he absolutely could. I mean, the president could pardon whoever he wants. Arpaio was pardoned. His crime, besides contempt of court, was violating the constitutional rights of U.S. of people on U.S. soil. And that he could pardon someone for that, to me, is really challengeable at the court, in the courts, at the judicial level. Because if you can pardon anybody who violates constitutional rights, that's different than, oh, this guy sold drugs in the 1970s, he served his time and he's done. That's why there are Justice Department recommendations for who should be able to be pardoned, though the president can pardon whoever they want, and any president can. This, what you just pointed out, though, with Sater and Manafort and all these people that he surrounds himself with, and should he pardon? This Arpaio was a political pardon. Mm-hmm. This was about, because Donald Trump plays low in the game like that. So he knows that the Arizona Senate race is up. He doesn't like Jeff Flake. He wants to stick it to Jeff Flake, and he could get some partisans on his side there for doing it. So I think it was purely political, but it sets a terrible precedent.
Absolutely. All right, guys, that does it for hour one. Thank you, Michael, for joining us.
Happily. Have a great second hour.
Thank you.
We'll see you guys.
All right. Brett Ehrlich will join in for hour two, so stick around. We're going to do some fun stories, some serious stories. It's going to be great. We'll see you in just a minute.
Serious stories?
Yeah.